You're listening to Paranormal Portal on Revolver Podcasts. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Paranormal Portal podcast. I'm your host, Brent Thomas. Thank you all for being here with me. I've got a fantastic show lined up for you guys today. One that I'm really thrilled to be doing with you guys. I hope you guys enjoy it because this is it's kind of a dream come true for me, really. But before I get that far, let me just say that if you have any encounter of your own that you'd like to have share on the show, please email me at paranormalportalradio@gmail.com. So today's show, whenever you're listening to it, is a really special one to me. The person that's going to join us is the person that inspired me to begin my journey doing a show and to try to enter the fray of podcasting. And he's been an absolute inspiration and a great help and a wonderful friend as well. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mr. Wes Germer of Sasquatch Chronicles to the show. Welcome, brother.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Brent. You're too kind with your words, man. Too kind. But thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
No, I appreciate it, you, man. So much of what you had done in the way that you did Sasquatch Chronicles and continue to do it, I really have tried my best to emulate, without going too far. I mean, I do my own show, of course, but, I really took a lot from your playbook when I was coming up with how to do the Paranormal Portal. And, I know you had an amazing experience. I know that you've also shared that experience hundreds of times and rather than duplicate all of that you've done so many times before, I would just like to say, at what point did you want to start doing a show?
It was, it's kind of a tough question to answer. I can't tell you, pinpoint it to a certain time. After my encounter, you and I have talked about this many times. I was like, where do you go? Who do you talk to after you've seen something like this? You know, and I didn't get the warm welcome from a lot of the Bigfoot researchers. And I found a lot of them, they're very condescending when they... I remember when I was talking about my encounter, one of the things a lot of Bigfoot researchers said at the time was, well, they don't crawl like a spider. They don't move like that. And I was like, well, I'm just telling you what I saw, man. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. Move like a spider, best way I can describe it. Because when they dropped all fours, it's not like a gorilla on all fours. It's very different. And It's funny now because you hear a lot of the Bigfoot researchers, they'll go, oh, did it move like a spider? And I'm thinking, you guys are condescending dicks. You know what I mean? Like, it just pisses me off. But I got to a point to answer your question is, after my encounter, I wanted to know what they were. I was so desperate for information. And, you know, you buy the books and you don't really, it's a bunch of hot air on most of them. There is a few good ones, but most of them is hot air. Just like when you talk to Bigfoot researchers, it's 90% hot air that you get out of them. And when I would go to start listening to, there was very few podcasts at that time. Mm-hmm. I couldn't find one that I wanted to hear from eyewitnesses is really who I wanted to hear from. And because if you ever listen to Bigfoot researchers, they regurgitate the same thing over and over. They copy each other. So mm-hmm. if you've heard one, you've heard them all. I really want to talk to eyewitnesses. So it was shortly after my encounter, I was like, hey, let's start a... the original idea was to do a radio show because I didn't know how to do a podcast. I had no clue what I still have no clue what I'm doing. But at the time, I really had no clue what I was doing. And so Woody and I went down to a bunch of different radio stations. I talk about this in the episode I quit. We went down to a bunch of radio stations and talked to a bunch of different program directors, and everyone told us no. I remember one in particular, he said, there's no way anyone's ever going to sit and listen to a show like this. No way. And when mm-hmm. we left, I said, let's do a podcast. And so we went down to Goodwill, got the $5 USB mic, and away we went. And there was a lot of bumps in the road. It's been a rough journey, but... I wouldn't change it for the world because of all the people I've met. All of the people really love the show, and that means a lot to me because there's so much hard work that goes into it. But I would say it was shortly after my encounter I decided I want to talk to eyewitnesses, and it kind of turned into a monster, for lack of a better term. I remember when there was 150 people listening to the show, and so... people seem to enjoy it, and I enjoy doing it for the most part.
Yeah, brother, it's incredible. And I tell you, I really agree with your approach, and I agree with your logic about talking to the people who have experienced it. You're right that, you know, the people that research, and this is true for all the paranormal community, you know, ufologists, you know, ghost hunters and stuff, they all have their ideas, they all have their theories, but they're all pretty much just bastardization of each other's for the most part. There's not a lot of really original stuff that seems to come out of there, but I agree that during the course of doing the portal, I have learned so much from the people who've called in to share, because everybody sees their experiences in a unique way. And so when they're sharing what happened to them, even though two people may have experienced something similar, both of those people are going to describe it just a little bit differently because something about it was poignant to them, whereas the other person, even though it might have been the same behavior, will describe it just a little bit differently. And to me, that really connects a lot of the dots, you know, connects a lot of the T's and dots of the I's and that kind of stuff, because I have so many questions about what all this stuff is and what's going on. And when I hear these different descriptions, it really fleshes it out for me. So I agree. I've learned so much from those people.
Yeah, I think that you learn more from... I think you really learn more from listening to eyewitnesses. And there was a time where I wouldn't hear any, you know, if it was odd or if it was paranormal, I wouldn't hear you out. And the guy that really changed my opinion about that was the doc, Dr. Bendernagel. He's the one that said, Wes, it's a very, you're very disingenuous. And I remember that hurt me when he said that to me, because I respected him so much. You know, I would have taken a bullet for that man. And yeah. I said, what do you mean? He goes, you have to hear everyone out. You can't just pick and choose reports or pick and choose eyewitnesses that fit what you think Sasquatch is. You can't do that. You have to hear everyone out. Doesn't mean you have to believe everyone, but you got to hear the other side of it too. And for a scientist, I remember thinking, that's weird that he's willing to hear paranormal stuff. And mm-hmm. he was willing to hear anyone out, you know, how weird it was or how strange it was. Excuse me. So I started doing that on the show where maybe don't be such a dick. And I'm talking about myself and hear everyone out. You know, you don't know. It's like I always say, no one has one in their garage or studying, and you got to hear everyone out, you know. And I think in the Bigfoot world, a lot of the Bigfoot researchers won't do that. The minute you go off on anything odd or strange, they don't want to hear any more about it. And that's not the right thing to do, in my opinion. If you're truly searching for honest answers, you have to hear everyone out. You have to. There's no other way around it. And the other thing, too, is you start to find a lot of weird coincidences. Like when people have these things on their property, you start to find really odd, strange coincidences with some of the weird stuff that goes on. I think your average hiker, your average hunter that runs into one, they're not going to describe any, they're going to describe running into an animal, an ape, a half a Neanderthal. Rarely do they ever talk about anything strange. It's generally when it's only on people's property, which I haven't been able to figure out yet, why you start getting more of the weird, strange reports.
Yeah. No, I think that's really cool and very true. And it's, I guess, one of the things that really surprises me, just for the instance, the Bigfoot, is how it's such a global phenomenon. You know, it's, this is, you know, we like to think we as people are adaptable, but really we're not. We just have the ability to recreate our comfort no matter where we are. But this is genuinely a being that seems to be able to not only survive but thrive in any environment on the face of the earth. And that, to me, is just incredible, and it really speaks to the amazing nature of these things.
Yeah, I would agree. And you know, one of the questions I always ask people is, what do you think Sasquatch is? And obviously, there's no wrong answer. And I learned a long time ago, you don't ask a question if you don't want to hear the answer. And a lot of guests I disagree with on what they're saying, but don't ask a question if you don't want the answer. And you learn a lot from hearing, you know, well, and a lot of it's based on their own experiences, you know, as far as what they saw, what they experienced, and what they think it is. And you're right, it's very adaptable. I mean, they have them in Alaska, they have them in the desert, they have them in Florida. They seem to cover just about every environmental area we have in the United States. I mean, really, I always think, well, how could this thing survive in the desert? Then I have military police officers telling me they see them running across the base in the middle of the night, New Mexico, California, Arizona, places you would never think, you know. And I remember when I started having those guests on, I started thinking, maybe this isn't an ape, because an ape doesn't make any sense. But to your point, Brent, you're right. Very adaptable.
Yeah, it's just crazy. And I guess before, when you and I were talking, we were talking about the entire spectrum of things that are out there. And to me, I don't know. That's, what do you think of all of that?
Are you referring to like other cryptids?
Yeah, like not only the Bigfoot, which is just, it's really an amazing, bizarre thing. But then you get into all of the other claims and encounters that people have of so many different things. What do you think's going on out there?
I don't know. They're consistent. A lot of the reports are consistent. I remember I wouldn't hear, you know, when I very first started the show, I was trying to keep it, you know, I almost became a Bigfoot researcher. It's that mentality of, oh, you know, science isn't going to take us seriously if we can't talk about anything strange. We got to keep it. And that's not really, like I said before, if you're looking for answers, it's not honest. You're not being honest about it. Because if you're going to pick and choose, then you've already figured it out. So what's the point in even being here? And to answer your question, yeah, like the Dogman. I have no clue what the Dogman is. Werewolf, whatever you want to call it. It goes through ancient history, half man, half dog. It's been called many things throughout history. Is what some of the Egyptians and Sumerians, or what they were talking about, is that what we're seeing today? I don't know. Half man, half dog is so bizarre. But one thing you'll find with a lot of those encounters is people are very, very consistent on what they saw. And I would always argue with people in the beginning, are you sure? Could it have been more like a baboon, you know, like a Sasquatch, but more of a baboon looking creature? And people were very adamant in saying, no, it was a canine, what I saw. And you and I were talking about this earlier. I had a state trooper almost hit one. And as he's coming around the corner in his patrol car, he sees this wolf step out in the middle of the road. Biggest wolf he's ever seen, according to him. He slams on his brakes and he's looking out the windshield and kind of has to look up. It's so tall. And he said, Wes, I don't know what to tell you, man. He goes, this wolf got up on two legs and showed me its teeth and then took off running like a man and jumped over the guardrail And he goes, I wasn't going after it. And he was really shook up. And this is a guy that I believe he was a state trooper for like 25 years. So he's been in this game for a long time. I'm sure he's seen a lot of weird things, a lot of bad things. And this really, you could hear his voice shake when he spoke. It really bothered him. But I think, you know, you start getting these other reports of the what they call the rake or the ghoul. And people, again, are very consistent on what they saw. They will describe it. People who don't know each other and don't know that I've talked to many people who've seen this thing, they all describe it from the long arms, long legs, long fingers, having the complexion of a dead person. Very consistent. I don't know what these things are and why people are seeing them more and more. It bothers me a lot because what's going on? Why are we seeing so many more cryptids here now? What has changed? Why are they? So to answer your question, I don't know what's going on with them. People are seeing them, these weird beings, though, out running around.
So as you started doing the show, obviously you initially at least, and I know you do have a variety of topics that you cover, which is phenomenal, but you started out as, focused on Sasquatch, Bigfoot and that phenomena. But were you surprised when the other things started coming in, the reports?
No. I'll tell you why, because I used to get them, but I wouldn't air them.
Okay.
So it's not like, I had someone who saw a dog man and now all these people came forward. I've been getting those reports since I started. I just would never air them. Because what do you make of that? I mean, with Sasquatch, you can kind of go, well, it might be an ape running around. So I guess that makes sense. Which in reality, it makes no sense that Sasquatches even should exist. So it was a very arrogant attitude that I had. But no, to answer your question, I mean, I've been getting these reports of rake creatures, ghouls, whatever you want to call them, dogmen. And most of the time when those people come forward, they don't really want to come on the show because it's even farther out there than Sasquatch in the general public's mind. So they don't want to come forward. But I've had cops, I've had preachers, I've had city officials, house moms to hunters to hikers that have seen these other creatures. And it was because of John. The doc, he was like, Wes, air it. Put it on the air. Just because you haven't seen it doesn't mean it's not real. And he was right. He's 100% right. Just because I haven't seen it doesn't mean it's not real. And, you know, I'm obviously not perfect, but that's my biggest complaint with a lot of Bigfoot researchers now, where I'm at now, looking at them and saying, just because you haven't seen it doesn't mean it's not real. So maybe listen to people. You know, you don't have to believe everyone, but maybe just listen to people. There's been times where I've had people, I've talked to them off the air and I've hung up and thought, yeah, I don't know about that one. And then 2 weeks later, someone calls and says, you know, that same type of behavior. I didn't say it to the person I was on the phone with them, And I'd be like, God, I just heard that. I heard someone else just saw it, you know, and there's no way they know each other. I didn't air it on the show. It was a private conversation. And then I hear it again. And then I hear it again. And so I've gotten to the point now, man, where I'll just put people on the air and let them just tell their story, you know, whether it's Bigfoot related or not. Most of the audience gets pissed off when I don't do just Bigfoot shows. But they're going to have to suck it up because it is what it is.
You know what I think is kind of interesting too is that through the course of doing the show, you've mentioned that many times that you have people that don't want to be on the air, but they still want to share it with you. Like just by the virtue of calling you and saying, Wes, this is what I saw. That in itself is very cathartic and healing for them, you know?
Yeah, I get that a lot. I think I'm a better listener, I think, than talker, but just having someone hear you out and not make fun of you. A lot of times you'll find with people who've had encounters, they'll try and tell loved ones and then they just get crapped on. Or they'll tell their best friend of 30 years and they get laughed at. And these are life-changing moments. Whether it's a terrifying encounter or not, it's irrelevant. It's a life-changing moment to see something that shouldn't exist. So it is kind of nice. I'm very humbled. It's a very... an encounter is something very personal to someone. it humbles me when they want to share it with me. Whether they come on the show or not, it humbles me that they would take the time to share something very personal to them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's amazing. And I agree that I've had a lot of different people calling me. Obviously, I don't deal with anywhere near your volume. Well, at least yet, but maybe one day. But, you know, it tends to happen a lot. These people call in and they even say on the follow up emails or messages I get, wow, it was really great to be able to finally talk about that. I've been carrying this for 30 years or 20 years. And like you said, nobody to talk to. They just didn't dare do it. But they finally felt like they had a forum to do it. And that's really humbling. You're right.
Yeah, it is. And then it's cool to get guys in the military or guys in law enforcement that will come forward and say, hey, this happened. I got a clip of a show, if you want me to play it, of a law enforcement officer. He held it in most of his life. And I believe, I'll have to go back and listen to the show. I believe it took place in the 70s. And the backstory is he was driving they used to have fire watchtowers. Mm-hmm. And people had to man these fire watchtowers. And he became friends with them. And he said these fire watchtowers are literally in the middle of nowhere. So he would, because he was on duty, he would take them and drive them up there. And he would get the next guy coming off his shift and drive him back. And they ran into something. And so, you know, it is very humbling to have someone in law enforcement his whole life share an encounter. And this is a country boy, too. This is a guy that grew up hunting. This is a guy that knows bears. He knows every wildlife out there. And one thing I found odd in the encounter, there's a little bit more to the story than what I'm going to play, but one thing I found odd in the encounter was there was a huge fire going on. What does every animal on the planet do when there's a fire? They run. This thing didn't run. This thing wanted to hang out and see what was going on. But it's a fascinating account. It's episode 511. It was No Damn Bear is what the episode was called.
Yeah, please, man. If you could play that, that'd be awesome.
But it had been a very long, dry, hot summer. So the Forest Service had started a fire watch. Now, nowadays, I think they have more sensors and cameras and things like that. But at the time, they had fire towers, and park rangers and other volunteers would go stay up in these towers for 8 to 12 hours at a time, and they had a reporting protocol. They had radios, they had binoculars, and all of this stuff. So just to help out as a deputy sheriff, what I was doing to save these guys some miles, because the fire tower in our county was, again, 30 to 45 minutes off the beaten path. And these guys would have to drive their vehicle up and just leave them in the woods and walk up. So I discovered that one of these rangers lived near me. His name was Dobbs. And so we struck up a friendship, and I agreed, since I was on duty and it was county gas, that I would pull around, pick him up, and I would drive him up to the foot of the trail. And it was a gravel turnaround area at the end of a forestry service road, and drop him off, and he would walk up the trail for about probably 30 minutes before he got to his fire tower. And then myself or someone else would pick up the off-going ranger, and so we were helping him out. And I struck up a friendship with this guy. He was a good guy. He liked to fish and hunt. And he packed a .44 Magnum revolver on his hip, so we talked about that, and he had put together a little bag, a little kit, and he had coffee and things like that in his kit, and he had a radio, and he had different things, binoculars, and he showed me his kit. He called it his fire watch kit, and he had a big walking stick, and I would drive him up there. And then this particular day, I was actually supposed to pick him up in the afternoon. Someone else had taken him up there. So I had the relief ranger in my car. And I drove up there and dropped him off. And, you know, I didn't know this guy. I can't even remember his name right now. But he had just been pulled in from a different district to help out with the fire watch in this area. So he pops out of the car, says, all right, good to meet you. Yep, good to meet you. And off he goes. He goes on up the trail. And the trail is, again, pretty steep going uphill. So I turned the car around, and I sat there, and I waited. And I had brought a thermos of coffee for the guy and everything. You know, he's my new friend. And I figured about 15 minutes, he ought to be meeting with the other ranger, 5 minutes or so to exchange any pass-ons or anything, and then my friend would come walking out. And he always tried to get out before dark. And at this time of year, dark was coming about 6:30 at night. So I sat there, and you know, I figured about 15 minutes, and I turned on the radio, listened to some news and stuff. And that's when I realized it'd been probably about half an hour, so I started to get concerned. It started to get dark. And I turned on spotlight, and I shined it up the trail off my police, off my cruiser, thinking, you know, maybe he's delayed. Something's held him up. So I wanted to make sure and illuminate the trail for him. And then it got dark. And so I turned on my overhead lights, the blue and red flashing lights. And I said, well, this way, you know, if he's, you know, all he's got to do is come downhill. But he may wind up on the road, you know, a mile away from me or something. So I wanted to flash the lights to where he could see where I was. And I waited another half hour. Now it's pitch blackout. So I was worried. I was worried about my new friend. I was worried what was going on. So I got out of the car, and I grabbed the thermos of coffee. I grabbed my flashlight, and I just at the last second reached back into that car and grabbed my Winchester 44 Magnum rifle. And I had a spare key, so I locked the car up, but I left it running with the lights flashing so that we could find our way back. And I took off up this trail, and I'd never been here before. And it was a lot steeper than I thought. I mean, I was pretty wore out in just about 10 minutes of walking up this thing. And you're basically on your balls of your feet and your toes, and you're reaching for it. And I'm using the butt of this rifle as a walking stick, and I'm grabbing trees to pull myself up. So I kind of had a new respect for these guys. But I get up, you know, well past where I thought the two rangers should have met at the halfway point. And I realized that, you know, it's dark enough. Maybe I should go back. This is when I began to smell smoke. And I realized that, okay, there's a fire, and this is what's delayed these guys. But, like, just what really bothered me at this point was that having been in this situation before, everything that happened in the river came back to me, and I don't know why, except that I was in the woods and it was at night. I've been in the woods a million times since that incident, but it was like someone took an ice cube and ran right down my back. It just, everything that I had buried in the pit of my stomach came back because my skin began to crawl and I realized something is not right. And it's not just the fire. Something's not right in the woods, and the thing that's not right is me. I'm out of place. And I distinctly had the feeling that I'd been watched, that something was wrong. And this is why I didn't turn around and go back to my car and call in the fire. And I moved forward at this point, and I started yelling out my buddy's name, you know, Dobbs, Dobbs. And I got concerned for him, and I got all on up the trail, and I got to an area where there was a clearing. Now, at this point, I'm almost up to the fire tower, because I'm almost up to the ridge. I certainly should have seen these guys. And at this point, the smell of smoke is heavy. There's an orange glow in the sky. We had a little moon. The moon had finally come out, and you know, I didn't just have to use my flashlight to see, but I could see that orange glow in the sky, and I knew we had a forest fire. And as I moved up on the ground in front of me, something caught my eye, and I bent down, and it was Dobbs's hat. It was a ranger hat, and it had a little pin on the front that, you know, had reflected, and I'd seen it. And I got very concerned at this point, and I yelled his name as loud as I could. I just yelled Dobbs as loud as I could and screamed it over and over. And very close to me, I hear a voice that says, shut up, it'll hear you. And that scared the fire out of me because the voice was, you know, 10 feet away from me. And, you know, I turned around and looked, and I took my flashlight, and I'm shining it around, and I finally saw him. And he had his back up against a rock, and due to the steepness of the trail, this rock, he could kind of lean on it and stay on his feet. And there were some scrub cedars, and he was kind of crouched, leaning backwards on this rock. And I just looked at him, and he said, turn that light off, get over here, it'll hear you. And so I did what he said, and I was walking over to him, and that's when it hit me. But what do you mean it will hear us? What are you talking about? And we got over there, and he just pointed, and he had his gun in his hand. And so, you know, I raised my carbine, and I'm looking around, and he points with his gun, and I look. Now, this is a small oval-shaped clearing. To, you know, from our side of the clearing, we were just inside the woods, to the far side was maybe 35 yards. Not a long distance. I had shot that distance with a handgun easily. And, You know, the smell of smoke was heavy in the air, the orange glow from just over the ridge. I knew if you'd walked over top of that ridge, you'd been able to see the fire. And there was just enough moon to where when we looked across that clearing and standing right at the edge of the clearing, we saw it. And it was tall. It, dark. It was more backlit than front lit, so I really didn't get a lot of facial features or anything like that, except that I could see that it was tall. Its arms extended pretty low, like down almost to its knees, if not past its knees. And it apparently was moving diagonally, which would be the way the slope would go. But it had seen and heard me, and so it turned at the waist, and it was standing there frozen, just like we were. And Dobbs was pointing his gun in its general direction. I instinctively pointed my gun at it, and this thing stood there and stared at us. And I could see it had very large eyes, like a horse's eyes. And there was just enough light to where I got a little reflection off its eyes. And other than that, I didn't get any impression from it, except there was just no sound in the woods. You'd have thought all kinds of animals had been running and all kinds of stuff. That happened later. Right then, we were just frozen. And it was staring at us. And I knew by the way that the light was that it could see us plainly, and we were staring at it. And this was not a one-second encounter. This was 30, 45 seconds of staring at this thing.
Interesting account. That's actually from episode 511. I hope it's okay. I brought clips, Brent. Sometimes when I've heard so many different encounters, sometimes it's hard to recount. Okay, they said this. So I thought I'd bring a clip. That gentleman actually is retired law enforcement. He had a strange encounter when he was younger. It didn't really see anything, but it was a very odd encounter. They were getting rocks thrown at them. A little bit more to the story. His buddy Dobbs, the reason why he was up hiding in that little area is because this thing had chased him. He pointed his gun at it. It looked down at the gun in disgust and walked over and basically wouldn't let him leave. So when the sheriff came up, that's how he's describing looking at this thing. But don't you find it odd? What do most animals do when there's a fire? They run. This thing was just hanging out. You know what I mean?
That is intense. It's so intense. I can't imagine. I almost laughed when he was like, Dobbs, quiet, it'll hear you.
Yeah. His friend was pretty shook up. And there's more to the story. I don't want to burn up your whole show just playing my show, but forgive me for clips. I just thought it was kind of a cool idea. I'll play it for your audience. That way they can hear what we're discussing. It went after his friend, and his friend was hiding up in that area, and it wouldn't leave, wouldn't let him leave, wouldn't leave. And very bizarre account, because the creature really hung around for a while. It didn't just take off, you know.
It wasn't even intimidated by them at all.
Not at all. Wasn't bothered one bit. And so that's what makes me wonder, you know, really, what are these things?
Mm-hmm.
I think most known primates would flee an area. The sky turns orange. I don't know if you've ever been in a forest fire, but you, even as humans, your immediate reaction is you want to leave the area. It gets really creepy really quick in a forest fire. But this thing didn't seem too bothered to go anywhere.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is probably a good place as any to take a break. So we'll be right back with more of Mr. Wes Germer on the Paranormal Portal. Don't go away. Hey guys, Brent Thomas here of the Paranormal Portal Podcast. We just wanted to take a moment to introduce you to the Paranormal Portal store. We've got t-shirts, hoodies, leggings, stickers, mugs, you name it, you might find it over there. So head on over to teespring.com/stores/paranormal-portal, and you too can help fund the Paranormal Portal Podcast. Thank you so much for all that you do, and thank you for being a part of our Paranormal Portal family. ladies and gentlemen, we are back. We are joined today by Mr. Wes Germer here on the Paranormal Portal. Wes, it's been an absolute pleasure and a journey, but what else you got for us today?
The only other clip I have, and I don't know if you want me to play it or not, is Claire. Claire came from the UK. She's pretty high up in the business world, you know, high up in the food chain as far as the business world goes. And the encounter took place in the late 80s, and this is episode 515, I Shouldn't Be Alive. And there's way more to the story than the clip I'm going to play for you. But one thing, and this goes back to what we were just talking about, Brent, you know, you can only get so much from a Bigfoot researcher. Mm-hmm. Basically, it's their account is what they're going to tell you. Or I was out in the woods and I heard something. Or, you know, you don't really... I know I'm a hard ass when it comes to Bigfoot researchers, but I think it's well-deserved with most of them because you don't get a lot of information. You really do get your information from an eyewitness. But there's so much to unpack from her encounter all the way to government cover-up. You know, and here's a woman from the UK, doesn't really know anything about Bigfoot. She went down to film the sea otters. She's in California on a business trip and really wanted to take pictures of sea otters. And she was telling me, you know, over in the UK, we don't really have, we have red-tailed deer, I think is what they have. She's like, we really don't have very many wildlife. And mm-hmm. so she wanted to film the, you know, take pictures of the sea otters. And so the encounter, again, takes place around the late 80s. And I'll play it for you if you want.
Yeah, please. I'd love to hear it.
We don't have sea otters in the UK. And I've gone out to photograph sea otters in Monterey on the Saturday. And I was staying in a hotel that's just south of Carmel. And the people down at Monterey Pier had said it was really good photography to be had up further. If you drive south, there's lots of beaches and creeks and coves, bits and pieces. So I went there in the afternoon, probably about 3:30, 3:45, parked the car up. There is a trail that's quite an open trail. It's more like a path that goes down to a beach and probably about 1/2 mile to 1 mile from the parking area. And at the first beach you come to is very, very stony. And then you can walk across when the tide's lower. And there's a big beach moving back up north that is very, very sandy. It was great. There's a load of rocks on the far side. So I wandered up there, sat down. I got my camera bag with me, taking photos. And was really just waiting for the sort of sundown. So just about to go back, very happy with what I'd taken. And we have an expression, someone's walked over your grave. You really feel quite, your hair stands on end, you feel cold. And I looked over to the way I would need to go back. And there were, I thought, first of all, it was a huge cat. But it was much more big and bulky than a cat. And then there was more than one of them as they came round the promontory where you've got the cove shape. And I have never seen anything like it in my life. Very, very large, very hairy, moving on all fours. And there were several of these creatures, one behind the other. It obviously wasn't a cat because it was moving in a very strange manner and the head kept popping up as if it was sniffing and then it popped up. It stood up on 2 feet. There was no other way to describe it. And it was bipedal, must have been 7 to 8 foot tall. It was followed in onto this cove by two other 5 to 6 foot, maybe just over 6.5 foot, and three much smaller ones. The larger one, which was definitely male, waded into the ocean. the two others, the two larger ones, which were, I would have said, females, sat down on the sand with the smaller ones. The smaller ones were digging in the sand. The large creature, the really large one, was ripping out seaweed and throwing it back towards the females. And they were chewing the roots where it had been pulled out of the water and rubbing it onto their chests and around their necks, and then draping it around over their shoulders. So I'm just sat there. I'm just watching this. I can't say I was actually thinking anything more than stunned. And probably, like the idiot I am, I just thought, well, no one's going to believe this. I'll take some photographs of it. So lifted the camera up to take photographs. Part of the lens kit dropped off, hit the rocks, went bouncing down where I was sat. And the large creature turned round. Every one of them snapped round and was staring toward me, at which point the male that was in the water basically was up to its, I'd say, mid-chest in the water, came striding out of the water. I've never seen anything move like that in my life. And basically, it looked the way it moved, almost as if it was gliding across the beach. One of the females, the larger one of the two females, came after it. And probably about 30 yards or so away from me, they had an argument, for want of a better word. They were screaming at each other in gibberish. The male that was in front was, it didn't take its eyes off me, but it sort of rotated from the waist. The head didn't really turn. It rotated from the waist. And it was like if you see a couple in a shop. It was verbalizing with her. It sounded like a language. And they were chuntering away back and forwards, back and forwards, back and forwards. And it was like a couple having a domestic dispute. Then it, the body turned right back at me and it just screamed. It was like no other sound I've ever heard. It was bellowing at me, and effectively it just threw down and slammed its fists into the sand and then stood up. It basically, the last thing I remember, because I passed out, I'm presuming I passed out, I was feeling incredibly sick, was this thing, mouth wide open, big pink mouth, and it was obviously male, it had an erection and it was urinating, and that is all I remember.
What happened next?
Well, what happened next is I came to. This was just coming, probably sunset by now. It was 5:30, 6 o'clock when this happened. So there was still very good light. The next thing that happens is I come to about 20, 30 yards back from where my car is parked. I was dressed in hiking boots, jeans, had a shirt on underneath, and I had a wax cotton jacket. They're fairly common in the UK, called barbers. And this one was a gamekeeper's jacket, so it zips both ways. So you can zip down from the top or you can zip up from the bottom. And this was actually almost pulled over my head. And you see, I can't understand how I got there. I was black and blue up my left-hand side, and my face was very badly scratched and bruised. I could have got there. I just don't understand how I got there because I can't remember getting there. I hadn't got my camera. I hadn't got my camera bag. I just don't know. Got to my car. I got the keys that were in my zipper pocket, in my breast zipper pocket. Got back into the car, drove to the hotel. Now, the hotel where you pull into it, it's right off Highway 1, just before you come into Carmel. And you don't have hotel rooms. They're little cabins built into the side of the valley as it's going up, facing the ocean. And they do valet parking. So you have to walk through the main reception area of the hotel to get to the car. Obviously, I was in one hell of a state. And the young man that was doing the valet parking went and got someone. They obviously thought I'd been assaulted. I wasn't making any much sense. So they put me in a side room and called the police. And the police duly came, took my details. But first of all, there was one guy. He just wanted me to run through it, everything that had happened. And I did. And he sat there and looked at me. The first thing was, he was saying, have I been drinking? Was I on drugs? Obviously, I was very young to hold the business position I did. He was quite incredulous until I got the business cards out. Then again, he was, what was I doing down there by myself? Or, found it quite strange. And he was just being, to my mind, incredibly rude and obnoxious by this point. So then he asked me to go through everything again. And by this time, another chap joined him. Now, the first man was in uniform. The second man wasn't. And if he was a police officer, well, I've never seen a police officer like him. He had jeans on, what we'd referred to a lumberjack shirt. So it was plaid, white T-shirt underneath that. He was in his 40s, early mid-40s. Very, very wiry, pepper hair, big beard. Didn't say anything. Just stood at the back of the room and listened to what I had to say, went through the whole thing again. And the man said, well, what you obviously saw was bears. You'll be very, very lucky. You're lucky to be alive. Obviously, you just concussion and you've staggered back up to the car. And, I think I said in my email to you, the largest animal we have in the UK, natural animal, is a red deer. But I know what a bear looks like, and there is no way on this planet that what I saw were bears. And I was quite adamant about that fact with him. And he read me the riot act, and what I saw had been bears, and I wasn't to say anything to anyone else about bears, other than it was bears. And I again turned around and said, absolutely not. And he said, do you not have police in your country? And it was, well, yes, we do. I said, but they don't tell you what to write in statements. And he just looked at me and said, do you understand English? I said, well, I am English, actually. I understand it very, very well. Thank you. And he said, you're not to discuss this with anyone. We've taken your report and you're not to go back there. And that was that. And that pretty much, that was the end of it, Wes. I stayed in the hotel over Sunday. I still felt incredibly sick. I cancelled my visit to Madison. I was due to fly up there on the Monday, and I flew home instead on the Tuesday.
Wow, what an account, Claire. What an account. I guess welcome to America. I mean, I think you were talking to a police officer and the other guy was probably a government contractor. I want to come back to that, though, in a minute. When you during the encounter, do you think you were dragged back to your car?
If I had the truthful answer, Wes, is I don't know. Do I think I was? I think I was dumped there because if I had walked and stumbled, I would have had marks on both knees, my hands. My hands were pretty much not damaged. It was the back of my hands that was scratched, and it was the side of my face. And I think I was dragged there. I think I was dragged there and dumped.
Yeah, I think that you were too. Your injuries are consistent with being dragged, and especially with your coat being pulled up, you're probably dragged by your coat and dumped there. And I think you're right. I think you would have had, you know, if you had stumbled back to your car, your knees would have been all scratched up. And so I tend to agree with you. I want to ask you, can you describe the creatures that you saw?
As I said, the one was definitely male. They were mammals. They moved from... The younger ones tended to move on all fours. And it's the strangest thing that, as I said, I've ever seen. They got a movement that, if you've ever seen lizards move, where they put their sort of forearms through, and it almost looks like a swimming motion. And then there's no distinct neck. So when the heads came up, it looked really quite bizarre. Black hair. The females had shorter hair than the male, and the males had round its face. The hair was longer. It was, I'm not saying like a lion's ruff, but you know, like a lion has longer hair around its face. It had longer hair and sort of a ruff around its neck. The chest was not as hairy, but it was like a very, very large, very fit bodybuilder. Massive muscles on either side of its head. The arms were slightly longer and very, very long fingered. It looked apish. Thin lips. It had flat teeth like us, but very large canines, black eyes. The eyes must have been... I was slightly above it on the rocks when I lost consciousness. And the eyes must have been about 4 or 5 inches apart. The actual facial area was hairless, the chest hairless, and the forearms were somewhat shaggy, but that was it. As I said, the females didn't have the same muscle structure. If anything, they seemed chubby, and they had shorter hair than the male. But other than that, the appearance was similar. It seemed more ape-like than human. That's pretty much it, really. The mouth was incredibly pink, but I presume that was because it was angry. And it was angry. That's all I can say. The other thing that I, you know, in hindsight, it's fascinating. They were definitely verbal. They were communicating with each other. They were in conversation with each other, a very angry conversation with each other, but that's all it was. It sounded like a language that you could almost understand, but you couldn't. I think in the email I called it gibberish, and it would... And when one would finish speaking to the other, it would go, and the other one, they would just back and forward, back and forward, back and forward. And that was pretty much that. Like I said, after they finished having their domestic, the male turned around as he was at full height, screamed, and just smashed his fist into the ground, and that and the scream. And I was very much bye-byes. Yeah,
I don't blame you for passing out. I probably would have passed out too. It's interesting how you describe the language, and I know when you and I talked off the air, I asked you about it, Ron Moorhead and the Sierra sounds, and you had never heard them before. I'm curious, did it sound like this?
I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I'll send it to you. That so that it was that quick monkey chatter there going back and forth. Interesting. What do you think the argument was about? Do you think she was stopping him from coming and harming you?
I think if she hadn't been there, we wouldn't have be having this conversation, Wes.
And that was episode 515, I Shouldn't Be Alive. I feel bad, Brent. I feel like I showed up and I'm like, hey, I'm going to do a commercial for Sasquatch Chronicles.
No, don't at all. I think it's awesome because you and I could sit here and have a dialogue about what it is, but it's the cleanest, quickest way to establish the conversation is to just play the clip.
Yeah, and Claire's encounter it fascinated me. I mean, she talked about seeing these, and I kind of cut, there's only a portion of the show I plugged in there, but she talked about, she thought that there were big cats the way they moved on all fours before they stood up. She said it was very bizarre, and she's really not in the Bigfoot world. Again, this happened in 1989. You can still hear the fear in her voice, and you know, she never heard of the Sierra sounds. And I said, did it sound like this? And she paused for a long time. She called me after that show and she was like, oh my God, I can't believe you have a recording of what I heard. And she said, that is exactly what I heard. Yes. And it was fascinating to hear them grabbing the seaweed and eating it and rubbing it on their body. And then the females putting it on their shoulders, they would eat a little bit of it and put it on their shoulders. That's what I'm talking about, man. You get so much more details from an eyewitness than you do a Bigfoot researcher. But I mean, even that encounter, she goes into those two guys always seem to show up. And what's weird is they show up throughout time. I mean, 1989, I've heard about them showing up in 2015. It's one guy that's kind of clean cut, looks military, looks like a police officer, and he's very polite. The other guy's just a dick. He looks like a lumberjack, and he's very adamant, telling people all they saw was a bear. I think in her situation, because there was physical evidence, she was physically injured. It was and her position in life, you know, being in business, it was important to shut her up. But it's one of my favorite shows. I love Claire. I could sit and listen. That British accent, man, I'm a sucker for it. I'll sit and listen to a Brit talk for an hour. You know what I mean?
I know. Now, do you think she was infrasounded on that? Is that what maybe knocked her out? Do you believe in that whole infrasound thing?
I don't know what to make of the infrasound thing. It could have been fear, because if you hear the whole encounter, she was really, really close to this thing, really close. She was actually up on a rock ledge, and what caught their attention is, you know those Canon cameras, how you can snap on the lenses?
Oh, right.
Well, the lens fell off. And that's what drew the attention of the creatures to her. I don't know if it was infrasound. It's hard to explain certain things. I mean, the guest I had on tonight for the member show, he was talking about how the forest just goes quiet. Mm-hmm. And everyone noticed it. Right before they had an encounter, the whole forest goes quiet. Crickets shut up, frogs shut up, everything shuts up. Is that infrasound? I don't know. I really don't know.
I don't know either, but you know, I've experienced that. And just a quick story, if you don't mind, I was I'm living in this area here, but a friend of mine lived up in the mountains. It's the same house where I had seen a flying saucer, the same place, but now they're living in it much later. She calls me because her husband was out of town and she's up there with her little child. And she's like, I don't know what's wrong, but the dog won't quit barking. The dog is going crazy and won't stop. And she said, it just feels really wrong up here. Will you come up and take a look? I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, sure. So I got in my car and drove like 20 minutes to the house and got out of my car. She never came out, but all the lights were on around the house. She turned on all the perimeter lights, which is good. And the thing that I noticed once I got the dog quieted down was that dead silence. I mean, even the insects. And insects, they don't know anything. They don't know when to be scared or something of something, you know, and that's what struck me. It's like the whole forest was just holding its breath. Now, I don't know if it was a Bigfoot or anything. It could have been a bear. I don't know. But I was really unnerved by that silence. It was just like everything was just waiting in suspense for something. And then, you know, after a period of time, I just kept walking around the house and looking, didn't see anything, but just dead quiet. But then slowly the crickets started chirping again. And then it was like this exhale, you know, and I knew everything was okay. So I know what they're talking about with that silence. It's just really, really unnerving.
It is deafening when you hear it. I've heard it a couple times. I heard it in Texas. I've heard it in Washington. Even my own encounter, man. I mean, it was so quiet. It's almost deafening. You almost see your ears almost ring because it's so quiet. Like, it just doesn't seem right. In that situation, I would have sent Don. I'd be like, Godspeed, Don. Good luck to you, pal.
Don, take this bacon and go check the perimeter.
Yeah, go check it out. If I don't hear from you in 48 hours, I'll assume the worst.
That's so funny.
The paranormal portal's got to go on.
Take one for the team, Don. Well, you know, that's one good thing of Don. He would do it too. He's just that kind of guy. But I think that that's just amazing. And now, before, you and I were also talking about this encounter that came out of Vietnam, and I don't know how much time you have, if you have enough time, but I'd love for you to share that with our audience, if you would.
Yeah, of course. I got a phone call from a guy in Australia, and he's an ex-colonel, retired colonel in the military, and he calls me, and he sent me a bunch of messages on Facebook. And you know, Australia, when it's, I don't know, 9 here, 9 in the morning, it's like midnight there the next day. So you get really, it's hard to figure out the time zone difference. Anyway, mm-hmm. we got it nailed down, and he wanted to ask me, he said, I ran into something in Vietnam, and he goes, that's one of the main reasons why I'm in Australia. And he said, you know, he hates the U.S. government. He hates, he felt like he was a lab rat for them. It took him a long time to figure that out. So anyway, he moved to Australia. Well, this guy's dying of cancer. And I could just hear it in his voice when I spoke with him. My dad died of cancer. My grandfather died of cancer. And you can always hear it in a man's voice when they don't have much time left. Very nice man. And there's a reason why I didn't put him on the air. He's taking a lot of different medications for the cancer, and the audience can be rough at times. And so because he's going through what he's going through, I didn't want to add any more pressure on top of this man. Mm-hmm. But he starts telling me the story, and he goes, what I'm about to tell you, we're talking over Skype, and he goes, what I'm about to tell you is classified. I'm not, and immediately I'm like, oh, Jesus, why did, you know, I don't really, and I almost kind of cut him off because I was like, I don't want, you know, I have a family too, guy, you know what I mean? Yeah. And so he starts to tell me, he said, when I was in Vietnam, he was part of the special forces. And there was an area, he went on and on about Vietnam. He said, Vietnam is the worst place on the planet. He talked about he hated the people. He said, the whole country stinks. He said, the minute you get off the plane, the country smells like a sewer. He said, it's just the worst place on the planet. It's hot. It's humid. It's hell on earth, really. And mm-hmm. so he's telling me this story. And so they're over in Vietnam. They get called out to do a special operation. And they're in the briefing room or whatever it is. There's an area in Vietnam that was a no-go place. The UN had made this area in Vietnam to where the U.S. wasn't allowed there. There was no military action. It was like a buffer zone. Mm-hmm. And they were going to go into that area, which is highly illegal. He knew it was illegal. And so he's sitting in this briefing room, and there's other people that are going to go along with this mission. And he said, Wes, I'd never seen anything like that. He goes, when you're in a special forces group operation, you have your guys, and you rely on your guys. And it's like you go in to do these black ops, these different operations to where they may or not be legal. But it's like a surgical knife. You go in there, you do your job, and then you leave. You're almost like a ghost. And he goes, the worst thing you can do is take along people with you. Well, these people were coming along, a couple Air Force guys, a couple, I think there was a Navy guy. And he couldn't figure out why they were coming along. So anyway, and he goes, the other weird part is we were armed to the teeth. Special Operations is armed to the teeth, but this was up and beyond what we normally go in with. And he goes, and we had a tank, which made no sense. Because if you're going to go into an area where you're not supposed to be, It's highly illegal. The last thing you want to do is roll in with the tank because, I mean, everyone's going to see you. They start going into this area, and they come upon this village. The reason why they went into this area was to kill some of the Vietnam rebel soldiers that were in the area. And he said none of this made any sense to him, but whatever. And he goes, you know, when you're told to do something in the military, you do it. You don't sit and question, you know, it's not up for debate. And even though we live in a democracy, military is not a democracy, so you do what you're told. So they go into this area, and he said, we're just outside the village, and all of these Vietnam rebel soldiers show up. And they all have their guns above their head, holding it above their head like they're surrendering. And he wasn't buying it. He said, these people do not surrender one bit. He said, it's always a trap. 110% of the time, they're looking to kill you. And they don't, there's no honor in them because they don't surrender. They'll fight to the death. Well, these guys all come out of the bush. And he said, there's about 20 of them. And they're all holding their rifles above their head. And he has a translator, a Vietnamese translator with him. And he goes, if you want, you can talk to her. She was there. She saw what happened. And she speaks pretty good English. These guys come out of the bush. And one guy's in charge. So all the American soldiers all have their rifles on these guys, ready to kill them. And so he orders his men, you know, stand down for a moment. The main guy comes out, starts talking to the translator. She has this confused look on her face. And she looks at him, and I forget what he said. She said something to him, and he goes, I don't understand what you mean. And then she tried to explain it again. He goes, I have no clue what you mean. And she said, basically what he's saying, it doesn't translate to English, but basically what he's saying is there's monsters by the village, and they want the U.S.'s help in killing these monsters. So he starts laughing. He's like, this is the most ridiculous. Monsters, huh? You guys are all afraid of monsters. So he starts giving them crap. And the soldier, and he said the only reason why he didn't execute every one of them was they looked terrified. These guys looked absolutely terrified. And he said, and I think he even told me one of the soldiers had actually peed himself. And so something wasn't right. He couldn't put his finger on what was going on. The main guy on the rebel force comes forward and basically says, listen, if you help us, we'll be your prisoners. We'll surrender. We'll go with you guys. And about that time, the village erupts. There's people screaming, women and children. Everyone's trying to get out of the village, and there's gunfire. And he said he heard something else that was very odd. He said it sounded like a lion roaring. All the rebel soldiers pick up their gun, or the rifles, and they point it towards they're just outside of this village, point it in that direction. And all the U.S. soldiers, he kind of tells his men, well, don't shoot them. They're not pointing their guns at us. You know, let's find, and it's mass confusion, absolute mass confusion. He said, I had no clue what was going on. And he said, outside of this village, there was two of these things. And he asked me if I thought it was Sasquatch. And keep in mind, this guy's breaking down in tears about he would talk for 5 or 6 minutes and then break down in absolute tears. And he would tell me, can you give me just like 5 minutes? I need to compose myself. Well, finally, he tells me what he saw was he saw a male and a female giant. And he said they were hairy, but they didn't look like the Patterson-Gimlin film. He said they looked very human-like. And I think he said they had red hair, but they were hairy, both the female and the male. And he said they were just giants. He said they were just huge, huge beings. He said when the male would scream or roar, he said it sounded like a lion on steroids. It was enough to freeze you in your place. And keep in mind, these are... I respect the military, but when you start getting into special forces, these are highly trained killers that don't get shook up by much. Right. These guys were shook up, and he said they had the female and the male both had canines coming out of their mouth. He said their jaws were just huge, huge beings. And he said the male was knocking over trees. He said one of the males grabbed a little girl, and he just broke down in tears. And I was like, okay, well, tell me what happened. And he said, well, He said it could have been my granddaughter. I mean, you know, now being an old man looking back, it broke his heart seeing this. He said that the male grabbed one of the children, picked her up. She's screaming for her life, crying, and he bit her head off and then threw her body. And he said the female was doing the same thing. She would grab men and just rip them apart, rip their arms off, rip their legs off, rip their heads off. And he said it was something out of your worst nightmares. He'd never seen anything like this before, never heard of anything like this before. So all the Vietnam rebel soldiers start shooting. All the Americans start shooting. You know, 20 minutes earlier, these guys would have killed each other. Now they're on the same team trying to kill this thing. And he said, we're all shooting at it. He goes, I know I hit the male several times. He goes, I know I hit that thing. Didn't even phase it. And he said they were so fast when they ran through the trees and just outside the village. He said you could barely get a shot off on one of them because they were so quick the way they ran. And he goes, it was almost impossible how fast they were moving. Tank couldn't get a shot off because the tank, it couldn't, you know, they were moving too fast. So he calls in air support and these gunships come in. The gunships gunned down the big male. And they also hit the female. They mortally wound the female, but she's not dead. So they walk up cautiously to the male, realize he's gone, he's dead. And the female's trying to crawl to the male. And he said the whole time the female's crawling to the male, she was chattering this weird language, almost like she was cussing them out, but they couldn't understand what she was saying. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know that Sierra sounds that you always play? He goes, you know, that where the male's going, rah, 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 rah. He goes, that's what it sounded like. He goes, that's exactly what they sound like. That same weird language where it's like a samurai chatter. And he said, so they walk up to the female and she's cussing them out. She's, you know, he goes, she was just nasty, just a nasty being. He didn't even know what they were. And the soldiers were going to shoot her. So he commanded everyone not to shoot her. And he told one of the guys, go get the flamethrower. Because they just watched this female kill all these kids, women, men, old people. And he goes, I'm going to burn this bitch alive. And he told one of his soldiers to go and light her up. And they lit her up. And she burned. And he said it took her a while to die, but she was screaming. And he said, we just sat and watched her burn. And he said, all the people that were embedded with us, what really pissed them off is all of a sudden they magically, you know, are pulling out measurements. They seem like they know what they're doing. And he's wondering the whole time, you know, you're putting my men's lives in danger by you guys coming along. Now all of a sudden, magically, you guys know what's going on. And I can't remember if the male was 18 feet or 16 feet tall. I want to say 16 feet tall is what he told me. It could have been 18. I'll have to go back and look at my notes. And he said the female, I think the male was 18. The female was 16 feet tall. And he said they couldn't even move them. They weighed so much. And he said they looked very human-like. And I asked him about the giant in Kandahar, the Kandahar giant.
Right.
And he'd never heard that story. And I said, you might want to go look that up. And he told me they looked very human-like. So anyway, they bring in the transport helicopters, and they wrap up the mail. He said the transport helicopter has two rotors on it. He called it by whatever the military calls it. I never served, so I don't know. And he said the guy taking off really had to rev the engine on those rotors to even get off the ground. And then they collected what was left of the female. And he said what really pissed him off is they get another order. In the next order, there's a cave on the other side of this village. They were ordered to take the tank and go blow up that cave because that's where the rest of them were. So they go over there, and he said by the time the rest of the – he said those guys that were there, all the Viet Cong or Vietnamese rebels, he said they had just faded way back into the bushes. He didn't even know where they went when it was done. They weren't sticking around. Mm-hmm. And he said, so they go to this cave and they find the cave. He said it was this huge cave just outside of the village. They didn't see anything, but he said you could hear him in there chattering back and forth, that blah, 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 blah. And you hear him running around in the back. So they took the tank and demolished the cave. You know, he said it's bothered him his whole life. and he wanted to know if that is what Sasquatch was. And I told him, I don't think you ran into Sasquatch, boss. I think you ran into something else. It sounds more like the Kandahar giant is what you ran into, the Nephilim. And then, you know, I've heard of accounts in Alaska. I've heard of accounts in the Middle East. And why wouldn't they be in Vietnam?
Sure.
But it was fascinating. And he told me, he said, the only reason why I'm telling you this, he goes, Wes, I'm going to be dead soon. So if they come kill me, they'd be doing me a favor by putting a bullet in the back of my head. He goes, because I'm going to die anyway. So, but the account was fascinating. It was really fascinating to talk with him and talk about this experience and what he went through. And he told me, he said, if you want, the translator lady's still alive. She's an old woman now. She lives in Vietnam, speaks great English. She was there. And a lot of his men, he told me, had committed suicide over the years. So most of his men are dead, but the translator's still alive. And I wasn't sure what to make of it. You know, what do you make of that?
Yeah, I know. And I'm thinking as soon as you started telling that story, I'm like, Giant of Kandahar. But, you know, in that situation, it seems like their patrol route for the Giant of Kandahar went by that cave. Like they were trying to elicit a response, and then the other team had to go because the first team kind of disappeared. And in this case, they were told to go into an area for one reason. And, you know, it's like, is there a government awareness of where these things are? And they just keep wanting to capture and study and capture and study. So they keep putting people in harm's way. You know, I mean, it just seems really weird that that story would repeat itself, you know, on two different continents.
Yeah. And I think with him, he was so upset. He felt like he was bait, like the U.S. government set him up as bait, and it really pissed him off. And he said, you know, he thinks most of his men committed suicide because of this, of what they had seen. And talking to him, the guy broke down several times. My heart really went out when I was talking to him. I really felt bad for him. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to make of that. You know, the Nephilim, if you believe the ancient writings, and I'm not just talking about the Bible, but if you go outside of the Bible and start reading, there does seem to be giants that ran around at one time, you know? Mm-hmm. And then if you believe the Bible, it says they'll come back. Mm-hmm. And so is that what we're seeing? I don't know. It's hard to say.
I don't know, but you know what I find really interesting? And this is another one of those things joining together these questions in my head, is the fact that the language between the Sasquatch that's reported, like the Sierra sounds, and now these giants seems to be a very similar language. Is that just an old ancient language that they still use and remember? But, you know, all the rest of us, maybe we never had that history or whatever, but, you know, does that validate that whole idea that these are, you know, descendants of the Nephilim?
Yeah, I don't know that they're, I would call them descendants. I really think they possibly could be abominations. Because if you read a lot of the ancient texts, it wasn't just giants. There was a lot of really weird things running around. Mm-hmm. And it is fascinating. Like, you bring up a good point. I mean, that language, I don't know what to make of it. The Sierra sounds are creepy, you know? And when I played it for that guy in Australia, the retired colonel, he had heard him before, and I said, was it like this one? And he was like, yeah, that's exactly what they sound like. You know, I don't know what. He goes, it was no language I'd ever heard before.
Yeah, that's intense. That's really, really intense. And, you know, I got to tell you, brother, I mean, it's always such a great pleasure to be able to talk to you, and it's a great pleasure to be able to hear more from you because, you know, as you're doing your show, it's not the Wes Germer show. I mean, you don't make it that, so it's kind of neat to have the opportunity to bend your ear and to see what you think and to have the opportunity to kind of look behind the curtain. So I really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, Brent. Well, you know, I appreciate you having me on, man. I really appreciate you having me on. And let me know if you want me to come back. I won't do a commercial next time where I just come on and play my show. But yeah, brother, thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's great, brother. You can bring all your show. I don't care. I mean, that's fantastic. It was great. Really a good time. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for being here and being a part of the show. And thank you for all that you've done for my show. You've been an amazing help and influence, and you've really been an integral part in shaping this, not only indirectly, but quite directly. And I really appreciate all that you've done on our behalf. So thank you so much.
Thanks, Brent.
Yeah, no worries, brother. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to wrap up our show. So thank you so much for being here. I hope you guys will continue to check out the Paranormal Portal podcast and make sure to subscribe. If you like what you're hearing, go on iTunes, write a glowing report. And if you don't like it, just keep it yourself. But we love you all. Be good, be kind, be nice. Take care of each other. Help each other out. Find the magic in every day and remember to laugh as much as you can. Thank you so much, everybody. Have a wonderful day.
Betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Martin, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.